Hills presents Intellivision. Intelligent television by Mattel. More sophisticated than any video game that has come before. Providing hours of entertainment for the entire family. Intellivision, with one of the clearest game displays available today. Find this system, plus a complete line of sports and video game cassettes at Hills, where our game is low prices every day.
All right, boys, it's episode 82 of the Red Leaf RetroCast. Host JD here. How you guys doing?
Doing all right.
I can only speak in Atari sound effects for this.
You're going to have to hit the correct number pad on this one, because I'm only familiar with Intellivision type communication now. Huh. The superior pre-1985 video game console.
Joey,
do you have any lame old jokes for us?
No.
No, you're too cool for that?
No.
Not too cool for that?
I got no jokes.
Well, this is the Red Leaf RetroCast, your favorite retro gaming podcast out there. Yours, mine, everybody's. Obviously, you're listening to this on Spotify or iTunes or whatever, and you've clearly left us a 5-star review already.
Huh.
Maybe you've hit us up on Twitter. Joey, you have a Twitter now.
I've had a Twitter. I just don't use it.
Whoa, cat. Jeez, there he goes. I knew it was coming. But yeah, Joey, Twitter. What is your Twitter handle so like three new people can follow you?
That's fine.
No? All right.
No. I don't ever post anything. It's very rare.
Okay, I'll
usually it's just me yelling at whatever sports team I'm upset with for the day.
Oh. So being a Texas football fan.
I don't even want to talk about them today.
Depew22. There it is, right there. I'll let the listeners try to figure out how to spell that. Anyways. Oh my god, Cat. He's just trouble. But yeah, I got back from Thanksgiving holiday. It was great getting drunk with Joey.
Got
to hang out for the first time in person in years. Great times. It was like our own personal bar at my dad's house. That was fun.
Nice. Yeah. It was a lot of drinking.
Colin, we drank like everything. It's like, oh, that looks good. Dad, we're taking this.
Oh, if the lockdowns weren't still in effect, I would totally join.
Oh, man. I risked my life to come hang out with Joey and my parents all the way in Tejas. Took a rapid COVID test when I got back to the RI. Came up negative for now. We'll see if I caught the thing later, you know. But I did get tested. I can come back to work. I am a tax-paying citizen, Colin.
So you got... Well, so am I. But you got a Q-tip shoved up your nose, I guess?
No, it was a rapid one, so it was just the simple swab. And they sent me an email. Said I was fine later that night. And, it was a wild experience at the airport and going through all that. You know, pretty much a ghost.
So.
Just a total ghost town. I am not joking. I was able to park my car at the closest lot to the entrance of the airport at the discounted price. So I was able to park, walk inside, and go through security in 10 minutes.
Oh, man.
And I'm like, dude, this is awesome. But then I got inside, and because, of course, they still tell you get there like 2 hours beforehand, I didn't know what to expect. I was like, all right, maybe I'll get a coffee. Everything is closed.
Ah, shit.
Shit. I was like walking around. Oh my god, there's a Dunkin' Donuts. I am going there. So that's what I did at the airport. Yeah. Say Newark was a bit more busy, just because, you know, much bigger airport. It's a big hub. Cat, you are really killing me. Jumping around everywhere. He's jumping on the mic table, causing trouble. Talking about my trip, kitty cat. To see
Joey's going crazy.
Where we drank everything. Anyways. Yeah, the Newark one was much better. The flight from Newark to Houston involved, no joke, the giant ass plane you would take an international flight to like Japan with.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, and I'm like, this is highly unnecessary. The plane's totally packed because they don't have enough people to fill up these flights, so they keep moving flights around to try to fill these suckers up. So that's why my flight was moved like 4 times. I end up, and there were still delays because they got to disinfect the planes and everything, or they don't have enough staff and whatnot. So there was just a host of reasons. So everything's delayed upon everything being moved. Yeah. So I had to get to the airport like 5 hours earlier than my original book time, but then I got to Houston later anyways because of all the delays.
Oh, shit.
Than my original time, so, you know. Lots of travel.
Makes me glad I don't work in that industry anymore.
No, it's a... But the fact that it's like a ghost town and everything's closed was very, very surreal. You gotta wear your masks the entire time. You, like, put it down for a second. There's like, sir, can you put your mask back up? I'm like, can't I just take a sip of water? I'm trying to drink a beer over here. Yeah.
That's when you get a straw.
A straw with a little hole through the mask.
Nope, just slip it up underneath.
Slip it underneath and keep it closed.
In peace.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, so very, very, very surreal experience coming back. Of course, everyone... So it's cool, though, that they have these like dudes that look like they're straight out of Iraq just sitting down in baggage claim, and I'm like, dude. It's, so instead of the drug dogs, now they got the COVID cops, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying rapid drug tests, optional. So I'm like, fuck, I gotta take one of those. Because I had one scheduled for like 5:30 in the morning at the hospital. I took one of those, and everyone's, of course, not doing it. So it's like, why would I care if I have COVID or not? They're like, oh my god, someone actually taking this. I was like, dude, you have to say that? It's kind of worrying.
Oh boy.
Yeah, but yeah. Rapid test, no problem. I got full contract tracing everywhere I went. I filled out my address and everything, so if anyone comes down with it and through the flights, they'll contact me. So that's nice. They're nice and safe there. At least I was. And then, Joey and I fucking drank my dad out of the house on that day. We had Whistle Pig. We had sake. We had lots of water. That's very important. Stay hydrated, right, Joey?
Yes, stay hydrated.
What was your favorite drink we had?
I don't know. We had a lot of them. Maybe the sake.
Sake wasn't bad.
It's a nice, cool refreshment halfway through.
Yeah. Yeah, we started. So, Colin, you'll get a load of this. So, Joy comes over. We meet up at my mom's place. Because my mom wanted to see him. She hasn't seen him in years. 4 or 5 years, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. My mom busts out fucking... what was it called? Red Dog Moonshine or some shit?
Oh, man.
Bear in peppermint. Mind, it's like not even noon yet.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so...
Peppermint Moonshine.
let's see. I can pull this up. Let's see. I took a picture of it. Let's see here. I can't find it. Oh, you know what? I think I only did a Snapchat or something. Anyways. Yeah, it's like Red Dog Moonshine Peppermint. Strong case on the peppermint. Put in our morning coffee. I had Bailey's. I stuck with the classic there. And from, I want to say, 11 o'clock till you left at what? Like 1:30 in the morning, Joey?
That's closer to 2.
Yeah. We watched a terrible Russell Crowe movie.
Go on.
Well, before we watched the terrible Katie Holmes movie.
We did?
The Thanksgiving one.
Oh, yes, that was awful. Yeah. The Russell Crowe one definitely stuck out to me, though.
Wasn't that bad.
I mean, I got some chuckles out of it. I don't even remember what it was called.
Isn't it The Nice Guys?
I guess you were just that plastered.
I mean, well, the thing is, I think we ate a lot over the course of the day, and we stay hydrated, so it was like a constant, steady buzz throughout the entire time. So that was great. Just woke up the next morning just exhausted.
Yeah, I was too.
I'm just like, oh man, I think I'd rather be hungover because then I could just stay in bed all day.
I think I ended up taking like 2 naps on Saturday, and I generally don't nap.
Oh, boy.
The old double nap pool. I've been there before. Yeah, so then I you know, after the flight and then waking up for work this morning, I came home, just a giant storm throughout the RI here, the island of Rhodes, just pouring rain, apartments just totally shut down, no power, ate in the dark, that was weird, and then I'm just like sitting here going, I wonder if we're going to be able to record this podcast over games before 1985. Yeah. So yeah, Colin, how was your holiday? Or I guess that was last month with Canada. What did you do over the weekend, Colin? There's a better question.
Nothing much. I mean, the last weekend was more busy because I had to go get a haircut, and then I talked to my parents' financial advisor as to what to do for long-term investments, all that boring stuff. Which I'll probably be doing on my own time.
I'm sure it involved heavy investments in the oil industry currently.
Yeah, it depends if I'm looking internationally or domestic. In Canada, more of the domestic stuff's in the banks.
Gotcha. Not the local lumber company?
Apparently not.
No? All right. Didn't get that Canadian joke.
Not even the local maple syrup manufacturers.
Well, we know Vermont has the biggest grossing industry of that, really impeding Canada's gross exporting product there.
Damn.
No. Jokes, guys. Come on, you're supposed to laugh. Investment jokes. God damn it.
No.
We are laughing at how pathetic they are.
That's true. But never laugh at your jokes. Never.
Listeners, if you thought these investment jokes were even a slight chuckle, hit me up on Twitter, @BowlingJD.
Or at least tell him how bad he is at jokes.
Oh, no, don't do that. No, don't spread negativity on the internet. That doesn't happen. We don't want that.
Okay, frame it in a positive way, how bad he is at jokes.
Yes, at least make it sarcastic. I will accept that.
Oh, boy. But yeah, this weekend I've been playing a lot of games. I mean, I've been reviewing for the games for the cast itself, but I've also been playing a few modern games. I actually, for Black Friday, got myself a buttload of games for the Switch.
Oh, all right. Do tell. What'd you grab?
Well, first was Cosmic Star Heroine. Been looking at that for a while.
I'm sorry, you got a game about smoking heroin?
Heroin with an E.
Okay, I mean, if you want to spell it wrong, that's fine.
Well, if you take enough of it, you're going to spell everything wrong.
I mean, Joey, you're absolutely right.
The epic space opera of a junkie with a laser gun journeying across galaxies for that next fix of China Cat.
Game doesn't sound too bad. All right, next.
And I also got Ease 8.
Ah, yes. Yes. Lacrimosa of Donna.
Yes. Although my Switch doesn't have enough memory on it at the moment to install it, so I'm waiting for an SD card I ordered in the mail.
Amateur move. Joey even knew about the extended SD card for the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
I knew of it, I just didn't bother to get one before buying this game.
Mm-mm-mm.
But the game was over half off, so I had to get it. And I can't find a physical copy anywhere to save my life, so this is
it's actually kind of a rare game, even on the Vita, and I believe it came to the PS4 as well. So yeah, it's just not a very mass produced game. I'm not sure why, but I have a digital copy of myself for the Vita.
Nice.
Your stupid Vita.
Look, man, just because it took 35 minutes for my mom to get through the Spelunky level, tutorial level, made it totally worth it. Just for that alone, that experience. Anyways, Colin, go on.
I also got Castle Crashers. That's a fun something game. I hope to play with my nephews down the line.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And Yooka-Laylee in the Impossible Lair. Looking forward to playing that one. Hello?
That's the sequel, right?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, that's the Donkey Kong inspired one.
Yes.
Yeah, I quite like that one.
Yes, you've mentioned before. And I got Murder by Numbers.
Not familiar.
It seems to play a lot like Phoenix Wright. It even has the music composer for it, so a lot of murder mysteries involved.
I will interject right there, because I'm glad you brought up Phoenix Wright. I got the trilogy on Black Friday for half off for my Switch.
Nice, nice.
Yeah, and the fact we covered it recently on the podcast, I was like, now's a perfect time to get it.
Nice.
Not when we played it for the podcast. Had to use a DS emulator for that sucker. But now I have it for myself. And it's the trilogy, so that'll be fun to dive into. Just to continue to interrupt, I actually got back into Danganronpa, the first one. So,
nice.
Yeah, I was playing that on the plane coming back. So just on my Vita, I'm like, man, I should actually beat this thing. So yeah, continue, Colin. I interrupted. I'm sorry.
Well, let me know how those games go for you, because I love those games. But anyway, I also got Hatsune Miku Project Diva Mega Mix.
Mm-hmm. Yep, fun rhythm game. Yep.
Yeah. And SteamWorld Dig 1 and 2. Those are pretty cheap.
Ah, yes. Okay.
Been looking at them for a while, and looks like fun, so I'll go through that, at least once I'm done with Spelunky on GOG.
Damn right. You and my mom are playing the same game, Colin. How does that make you feel?
Not sure how. But I also, just for kicks, got Night Trap, because it was cheap. But that also is too big to download onto my system, so gotta wait.
That song right now.
And Toe Jam and Earl Back in the Groove.
That's the newest one, correct? That's the title of the newest one? Yeah, played that.
And This War of Mine Complete Edition. I don't know if you guys have heard of that.
I'm just gonna play this softly in the background as you talk, Colin. Fucking Maytrap song, baby. Comedy Live.
It's a
Sega CD.
It's a classic. But yeah, This War of Mine, that's basically just a game where you're a civilian in a war zone trying to survive. And that's pretty much it. Gotta make all these tough decisions along the way, like, do you let a certain person die and be able to bring food back to your family, or take them with you and then all of a sudden have another mouth to feed? It's all that. All that tough stuff. And Oddworld Munch's Odyssey. Just cause.
Of course, but you should really get back to Night Trap so you can just know the song straight in your head. It's been playing the whole time.
I know the first few seconds.
Night Trap, woohoo! Joey, have you ever played Night Trap?
No. Never.
Oh my god. Terrible FMV game. But it's fucking 90s as fuck, man. So what else, Colin? What you got?
For PS4, I decided fuck it and got Sakura Wars.
Oh, I was really thinking about pulling the trigger. Covered that on the podcast, Modern Gaming. I'll have news on the Modern Gaming cast at the end of this one.
Well, it's 50% off if you're so inclined.
Mm-hmm.
And those are pretty much all the games I bought. Speaking of the Switch, I have been playing more through Zelda Breath of the Wild, and finally found and beat the first main dungeon.
Ah! Yep. How long did that take you?
Well, getting to it took me at least 5 hours, I know that.
Ooh, buddy. Which one did you hit first?
The big mecha elephant at Zoro's Domain.
Oh. Oh, that's a tough one to hit first, man.
Yeah, I beat it.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all beatable on your on the first go. I made the mistake of doing the water temple first. That shit was hard without any upgrades. Dude.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I feel that they're all hard in their own way until you... But then after that step is when the game gets a little easier because you have that one upgrade and that is just more than enough to help you on to the next step.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of cool that you can use the Sheikah Slate to actually like manipulate certain parts of the dungeon to solve certain puzzles.
Yeah, that was kind of the shtick to the whole thing, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the puzzles were a bit of a chore, but I was able to get through all of them and even get all the treasure chests. So that was an enjoyable experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also, of course, here comes my bi-weekly CrossCode update.
Ah, yes, of course.
I was actually playing a bit of that before coming onto the cast. Just been going through a few side quests. I seem to be very close to the end game now. So I've beaten all like the dungeons for the game within the game. And now I'm exploring this new area before I go to explore another area that supposedly has the next big main plot point behind it. Right now, going through the arena, buffing up my levels, upgrading my equipment, all that cool stuff. It's gonna be quite an experience.
All right.
And I also finally bought and downloaded the DLC for Doom Eternal.
Man, you're just buying a whole bunch of things. I guess it is that time of year, right?
Well, ever since I got my new job, I've been addicted to spending. I can't stop, man.
Oh man, I have to invest in the economy. Well, it's not like we can spend our money on a new video game console or anything. That'd be silly. Like, that exists.
Yeah, I mean, everybody knows all the scalpers scooped them up, and now they're having a hard time getting rid of them.
Yeah, because no one's actually buying them.
Yeah, they're actually calling on YouTubers to advertise. They're that desperate.
Wow.
But yeah, Doom Eternal. Hey, not a whole lot to say on it. It's just more Doom Eternal, which is always welcome.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this time around, the fights are more intense, and there's new music from new composers since Mick Gordon severed ties with id Software. And I gotta say, I'm pretty impressed with the new music. It was composed by Andrew Hulsholt, who apparently worked on Quake Champions, and David Levy, who is a mainstay of id Software. I mean, it's not quite Mick Gordon level, but it's damn close, and it really helps get your blood pumping when you're facing off against huge hordes of demons coming in waves in an arena. So I'll definitely be playing more of that. And of course, get ready, guys. I mentioned before I bought Kingdom Hearts Melody of Memory, and I've been playing that.
Like, never fails.
You are so predictable.
Oh, we're ready.
And you're making me ready. It'll be all the sweeter once I finally knock you guys down a peg, but that's for another day.
Ew, gross. Save that for Brazzers.
You love it. But yeah. Yeah, for those who don't know, Melody of Memory is a dedicated rhythm game in the Kingdom Hearts canon. As rhythm games go, it's not bad. I mean, it's way better than Square's past attempt at a rhythm section in Kingdom Hearts 2. That's kind of become a meme among the Kingdom Hearts fandom. It's just so out of place and so ridiculously bad. It's just so fun to make fun of. I mean, I don't know if you still want me on the modern cast, JD, but to talk about that. But let me know off cast and I can go more in depth with the mechanics. But yeah, it's I'm having fun. I mean, you're basically playing through all the different like tracks from the official soundtracks of the Kingdom Hearts games, and I really love the soundtrack, so it's perfect for someone like me. I mean, it's no Elite Beat Agents, but it's still unique and creative enough that it's just fun to play. I mean, if you're like me and you like listening to the Kingdom Hearts soundtrack on YouTube, this is perfect for you. And it's way more forgiving than something like Parappa the Rapper or Umjam or Lammy, so you don't have to worry about difficulty.
Impossible. How dare you besmirch the name Umjam or Lammy?
I said it's easier, not necessarily better. I'll say that too.
It sounded like besmirching to me. Let's stand for this.
I'll besmirch all day and night. Just one last thing. Story-wise, it's the video game series equivalent of a recap episode. I've never seen that done in a single game series, although if such another thing exists, somebody tell me. But it's perfect if you still find yourself confused by the whole storyline or just haven't played every single game. It'll offer some clarity as to it, the storyline. But yeah, those are pretty much all the games I've been playing.
All right. Well, mine's short and simple. I've been playing podcast games, getting ready for the next set of episodes, especially a special cult classic RPG episode we have coming up next. And so I've been playing those. And I've reached the halfway point in Bravely Default. So, Ooh. Yeah, I beat the Wind Temple, Water Temple. I'm at the Fire Temple. Heading through there. I feel like I got the mechanics down pretty much to how you're meant to play them, switching between classes, getting various upgrades. I think I got just a good little Dark Mage setup, got some new plot points where I think one of them has memory loss, but he has a split personality, or maybe he's an undercover agent. Not really clear right now, but when it says default, I didn't realize that the story would be pretty default. so it's definitely moving fast for an RPG, which I can appreciate. So kind of juggling through a lot of games right now, but really sticking to what I want to do. I want to get to sweet 50 completed games for 2020. I'm at 47. Currently, so I just need to beat three more and I reached my goal. I beat all the Yakuza games as I covered in the last episode, so that was a big goal. I'm not going to beat another Tomb Raider game, it's looking like. So the only beat Tomb Raider 1 and Angel of Darkness, that was kind of goal enough there. But yeah, halfway through Bravely Default, quite fun. Black Friday, I got 13 Sentinels. That was half off. I thought about pulling the trigger on Soccer Wars since I did mostly enjoy it, covering it for the Modern Gamecast, but I feel I still could wait till it's like $20. I don't think it's worth more than that, to me anyways.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I did enjoy it though. It's a little too anime tropey. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's more of a... It's way more focused on like character and story in the visual novel sense than any gameplay. And shit, my dad just set off the smoke alarm downstairs.
Excellent. It's okay. I can hardly hear it.
Okay, now it's gone.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's mech Dynasty Warriors combat as well, but it hits like less than half of the game.
Oh yeah, there's not much to it at all. I did take advantage of the little Steam sale. I got my own copies. I don't have to like log into friends' Steam accounts anymore.
And, oh yeah, I also got some Steam games too.
Yeah, well, you had your turn. You're done.
Cutting I got Stanley Parable, Pray for the Gods, and Rakuen.
Oh, Pray for the Gods. Good. Good, good.
Yes.
Humans Fall Flat, since they had a free little upgrade cities thing. So, Joey, I think we should play that together. Among Us.
I don't know why I have that game. I don't think I've ever played it.
Well, good. We get to play it together. Next weekend. The date. Among Us is now officially mine, and so is Phasmophobia. So... Little late on the train there, but we'll also play that. Deal, Joey?
Sure.
All right, there we go. Woo! Got a plan. No takesies, backsies. Joey? Been playing that Smite?
Yep, I've been playing a lot of Smite. Lots and lots of Smite. Having a lot of fun with it.
All right. Got any details for us?
Been trying to get all the Ninja Turtles skins. I only have one more to go.
Ooh, which one's the last one you need? Donatello? I bet it's Donatello.
It's Donatello.
Knew it. See, Colin, oh. I know things.
So I just got 12 more levels on the battle pass to get to there.
All right. So, do we have anything else we want to hit? I mean, nobody has a new console yet. Right? No? Colin, you got a guy?
No, the newest console I bought was Switch.
All right. Okay. So, I have modern Gamecast news. I'm throwing it in the middle of the episode to see how many people notice. I'll bring it up for the next one as well. Big podcast changes are coming up, especially in 2021. Most notably is the modern Gamecast. It's we are going through a little bit of changes here with the hosts, namely Jay. He has important life things that are coming up. Basically he has less time to dedicate to the podcast, more so than he already is. And with the changes and the idea of what we want the modern guest to turn into, still going to cover, briefly thoughts over, you know, any new games we've been playing and whatnot here on the Retrocast. But for more in-depth talks over the reviews as singular games is going to be the idea going forward, and just pay attention to the social media accounts, namely, you know, mine at BullingJD and Instagram, where things will be announced over where we're taking the podcast forward in 2021. You could probably guess with how much content we're putting out and how well popular that it's going that I've actually been contacted by a couple people to put together some other things, and namely it's with wrestling, so it doesn't concern you guys, but the modern cast specifically is going to go through changes to something I think the people that want deeper reviews and something that would take a little bit more time and focus into those, you know, it's gonna require more effort on my part, which of course would require more time. Catch my drift, Colin and Joey?
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, pay attention to the social media sites. We're going to conclude the current format of the Modern Gamecast in December here. We'll do the November games as usual of what we'll cover, and then we'll just, instead of saving our Game of the Year cast for January, since... nobody has new consoles, and we just, because we can't review those modern games in the same light, I have the money for a PS5, and I want to properly review these things, it's not going on hold per se, but it's on the lifeline of when I can get the new console. So, with that, I will play this sick Toe Jam and Earl drop, and we can move on to our probably short theme today, which is on purpose because of the USA holiday that had occurred. So here we go. There we go. Sick beats were dropped. Hope you enjoyed that, Colin. I know you listen to the podcast in your free time.
I have a confession to make.
Yeah,
I've never listened
to
it.
Talk.
I know you do, Joey. I know you do. You just don't want to admit it. You're a sick
never
listener.
Listened to an episode.
You contribute to at least 100 of the 500 downloads.
Nope. I don't think I've downloaded it once. I don't think I've listened to it
God
once.
God damn it. Play to my ego a little bit, please.
I just create it and let it go out to the wild and set it free, you know?
All right. So this was my theme pick. I wanted to do a short and simple theme and kind of get us perspective on, well, a different era of video games. Retro games specifically. Of course, this is the Retro Gaming Podcast. And my theme was pre-1985 adventure games. So these are games that came out before 1985 on, say, the ColecoVision, Atari, various consoles or home computers, if you will. The Intellivision was up for grabs. So we got one from kind of each console here, basically. And even Kay has his little ghost pick for us all. And yeah, what'd you guys think of busting out the emulators, because I doubt you guys have just an Intellivision laying around in 2020. I had to bust out my emulators for these games, although for the Atari 2600 I do have one of those, and I was able to play the games for that, no problem.
Look at you, Mr. Fancy.
Look, man, I got a good deal on an Atari 2600 not too long ago. I guess that was 2 years ago now. Anyways, got a good deal, and all the games are like 50 cents, so they're not expensive. What do you guys think of busting out, an emulator for these sort of games, or the Intellivision collection for the GameCube, or whatever way you had to play the games? What did you think?
It was a pain in the ass.
I agree. It's not like the games were long enough to really justify going through all the work for it.
I mean, there's one you could put a decent amount of time into, that's for sure. Actually, a few. Yeah. Now that I think about it. All right. So just a pain in the ass, not maybe one was surprisingly fun, maybe one was deeper than you thought, especially for a fucking early 1980s game.
One or two.
Okay.
Maybe three.
All right. Well, fair enough. Okay. Well, I won't waste any more time. My first pick for this podcast was a ColecoVision game called Gateway to Apshai. APSHAI. Action-adventure game. So various different adventure games. It also came out on the Atari 8-bit Commodore 64, released in 1983. I played the ColecoVision version specifically. This one was way deeper than I expected to go through it, especially with the numbered pad controls that the ColecoVision has. If you aren't familiar, ColecoVision had a controller that looked like a telephone. That was a rectangle. The Intellivision had a disc on it that also had the telephone aspect, and then the Atari just had your simple little analog control thing with a singular button. You can imagine which one took off more and was easier to get into.
Yeah.
For a lot of these games of the time, especially the ones with the number pads, what would come with the game would be an overlay that you'd put over top of the controller's number pads, and it would tell you then, which button would do each. For a lot of these, though, I had to look up a manual online to see what each one would do. Like, what would the triggers on the side associate to? Usually, each game was a lot more simple than you would imagine. You wouldn't need even two-thirds of the actual numbers to it, but you get the point. So, Gateway to Apshai, it's like a dungeon crawler from the early 80s. You're just this dude going through essentially randomized dungeons, and you have spells. What happens is you get a singular screen, and there's rooms, and then you would go, you know, left, right, up, or down, whichever way a wall isn't, and a new room would load, and sometimes there might be a snake in there, or a rat, or whatever. And at the bottom of the screen is your current selection, be it a sword, a spell to reveal a possible trap in the room, those were my two usual ones, I guess. You could also use a spell if you collected it in a treasure chest. And there was a sort of give or take kind of system in here where you knew a treasure chest was a trap, but maybe there's a spell in it and it's worth taking damage to it. There's 99 possible levels in the game, each level, quote unquote, has 8 stages in it, so that equates to about 16 dungeons to quote unquote beat the game. So there's a lot of content in here. The real only issue I had with the game was the fighting system. So your sword, just you press the button and a sword will just kind of spew out, and you just kind of waves it once and that's it, and you have to keep pressing it so he keeps waving the sword in front, but the hit detection was like just slightly off enough where it became a problem. And if you get hit by the enemy or take damage, the screen kind of blinks red, and if you do damage to an animal or what have you, it blinks blue to tell you you're doing the damage. And each stage kind of has a set amount of time to it that you have to complete it to go to the next one. I believe it's 6.5 minutes, and I looked up a cool little video of on YouTube of people like uploading them playing these games when they were a kid in you know, the old 80s tape form, and it's really cool. Like kids would have like alarm clock set to like 6 minutes, and it would go off and they're ready to get ready to go to the next stage, or they'd have like an hourglass of some sort and they'd have to guess, oh my god, time's ticking down kind of situation, even though there's a timer in the upper right hand of the screen. So I thought that was a neat little thing. I tried looking up home videos online of people playing a lot of the games for the podcast. This was the one that had kind of the most interesting part, besides just someone staring at a old ass TV and playing the game. So what'd you guys think?
Well, it's pretty advanced for its time. I mean, I can't say I expected something along the lines of an action RPG. I mean, I mostly watched like a YouTube video of it because I couldn't. I had like a ColecoVision emulator, but I couldn't really like make the level end once I'd reached the end. But
to advance and go to the next one. Well, it should go automatically once time expires.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I will say I like the game's animations and sound effects.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, granted, I think the one I was watching was the Commodore 64 version. I mean,
that would make sense. Yeah.
For the time, it was pretty detailed, as tends to be the case with Epyx games. That's EPYX, for those who don't know.
Right. Right. And the other thing of the time is you'd have like one or two people making these games for a company.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was kind of cool that you get to level up between levels. So. Although I think it's not quite the earliest example of this kind of dungeon crawler RPG. I think Ultima did it first.
I think you're right, yeah.
Yeah. That's a pretty, well, I guess you'd call it like a cult classic series. I don't think it has like any, like, much of a mainstream pull. But, yeah, for the time, this game wasn't bad. I mean, I just wish I could have figured out how to work it. But I'll give it a pass.
There you go. Joey?
I like that the character looks sassy if you kind of stopped walking after going left or right. Kind of like its leg out, hips back, like, don't mess with me.
Oh man, see, that's the content we're here for.
But for the most part, there's no real reason to fight unless you really had to. It was just better to run away.
Yes, found that out firsthand. Yep, very true.
Yeah,
so I mean, it was interesting with the all the mechanics and everything with it. A very basic game, but I mean, it's not terrible. I'm gonna pass it, but it's not something I would seek out. But if you have it, or if you can get it easily, then it's not that bad to play it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a ColecoVision game. They run a little bit more expensive compared to Intellivision and Atari 2600 games, but I think this would run at the top of my list of a game if you're getting into collecting for ColecoVision or interested in just ColecoVision games. This one really stood out to me as one to get, besides Donkey Kong, of course. All right, so we all pass it. Excellent. All right, obviously with this kind of theme pick, I couldn't, you know, just pick 3DO games. So I'm sure you
much
guys
to did. Your chagrin, I imagine.
I'm sure you guys were very happy with that decision.
You better right. believe it.
My next pick was Advanced Dungeons and Dragons Treasures of Tarmin. Okay, came out for the Intellivision. An exclusive, mind you. Also, the Mattel Aquarius, whatever that is. Also came out in 1983. It is technically an RPG adventure game. Developed by APH Technological Consulting. How could we forget? Published by Mattel. Yes, that same company. This fucking blew my mind thinking this came out in 83. It is a 3D adventure with like turn-based mechanics to it, going through corridors in a maze to steal the treasure from a minotaur. That is what you're doing.
It's a first-person dungeon crawler.
First-person, yeah. Yeah, it's and if there's one thing I've learned, you're going to have to be some sort of special game in order for me to enjoy a first-person like maze hallway thing. There's another one that we're playing for the next podcast that does this bullshit. Basically, if you've played the early Persona games and you're going through like the hallways of a school and every fucking turn looks the exact same and it's first person,
yeah,
like I hate that. This was that, but the whole point of it in 1983 was to make a long game out of it, and it's a maze, so the point was to get lost in a way. Right? So I'm like, okay, my mind is going off into disbelief land. I can suspend it. I'm going to go through this like 12 by 12 square maze. I can actually mark it down with pencil and paper to remember my tracks. I just have to remember I went left, right. The hardest thing of this game was figuring out how to switch between the items you'd like pick up off the floor and make sure you don't fucking drop them every time. And then how to use health. So this is one where I had to 100% consult the manual the entire time. It's like, all right, so how do I do this? All right, what am I doing here? All right, so I see a skeleton. All right, that's a weak piece of shit, asshole. I'll get rid of him. Oh, fuck, a dwarf. They're an asshole. Basically, all the enemies are assholes. There's a dragon in this game. Did you come across a dragon?
No.
I mostly watched YouTube videos.
Did you watch enough to find a wraith?
I only saw ghosts and skeletons. Unless the race are ghosts, spooky little ghosts.
No. The ghosts are different because they don't appear until you go like further into the game. The wraiths are like total dickheads. That's when you get like super, super deep where you're like getting to the minotaur itself. They have like shields and shit. So they're like asshole ghosts. This game was so much deeper than I was even ready for. My brain couldn't comprehend like what the hell was going on half the time. Mostly because I didn't know the controls and I was constantly consulting a manual.
Yeah, there's no way I would have figured out how to play this game even with an actual controller.
And with the Intellivision controller, it made it just like super weird because the Intellivision controller has like three buttons on the side, plus the number pad and the disc and the button on the disc, and I'm like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And because I don't have the overlay from my copy of Dungeons & Dragons, Treasure of Tarman, I was just up Schitt's Creek here for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, I should point out I've never played an actual tabletop session of D&D in my life. I mean, I've been interested in going to meetups that are specifically geared for introducing people to the game, but current events make that impossible.
I mean, there's virtual things.
I would definitely recommend it. It's a lot of fun.
One day.
Joey likes the Dungeons & Dragons.
I do. I haven't played it since the before times, but I do like it.
The before times? The long, long ago when you can hang out with humans?
Yes, the before times.
Yeah, I feel like it's something I need to be in person for.
I mean, it's not too bad with, like, Roll 20, but yeah, in person's way better.
Yeah.
So, needless to say, I did not get to the Minotaur. I found this game actually pretty difficult at times, and it's a steep learning curve. That said, I will pass this game. It surprised me, and if you can have the patience to figure out the controls, because I think that's the steepest curve of all, you might, like, if you're into, like, a Dungeons & Dragons and you're into this age of games, this one's definitely worth at least trying.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying there, but along the way, I found myself more than once thinking back to a Steam game in development called Fight Night.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, that's sort of like an underground dungeon, first-person dungeon crawling thing, except you're actually, like, melee attacking the enemies. Just, I think it was just how much I'd rather have been playing that game.
Okay.
I mean, unlike Star Raiders, which we covered on episode 42 of the cast.
Oh, good memory.
I mean, I would have been totally interested in playing that one because of all the, if I had all the various gaming accessories needed for it, that would have been a lot of fun because it'd be sort of like a Star Trek bridge type sort of thing.
Gotcha.
But this game just doesn't spark any interest within me to play in depth. I mean, admirable attempt at a more immersive experience, but doesn't do anything for me, so I gotta fail it.
Okay, all right.
I am also going to fail it. Oh. There is way too much green.
There was a lot of green. You know.
They could add it just maybe one more color. They already have blue doors, you know, or just to make the floor and ceiling different instead of everything green.
I think that's a fair assessment, actually, because I believe the Intellivision was definitely capable of more than what the Atari was graphically. So I will agree with that, Joey. All right. So since Kay is not here and this next game is his pick, I will also cover this. It's also my theme pick. Haha. This one is called The Dark Crystal. It is a graphic adventure game, so sticking with the theme there. Came out on the Apple II and Atari 8-bit. It is published by Sierra Venture and developed by Sierra -Line. See what I did there?
Okay.
No? All right. Yes, it's a high-res adventure is the exact one. It is not what I was expecting going into it, but I actually found this weirdly fun. I am into kind of these text-based adventures, and I'm not going to lie. I beat this game, but I'm not putting it on my beat game list because I just used a walkthrough of the right commands and just went through it all.
Yeah. Yeah, it's even more obtuse than King's Quest.
It's way obtuse because it comes down to single letters that make no sense. Like N advances your character, but it also can make the character go back. V can also do that. E is not escape, as you would think, from the situation. R is not read. Look around, but only when specific, because then the wrong one will kill you. So it was so specific, and I had no clue, based on my past graphic adventure, text-based things, experience, what to even input in this sucker. So yeah, I looked up a walkthrough. I got every command that I needed to advance the game, and you could beat this game in like 12 minutes. So,
I feel sorry for the kids who played this way back when, all the trial and error they had to go through.
See, I think the manual for this game, I wasn't able to find it, but I have a theory that the manual for Dark Crystal involves you telling what each command will do, and it probably has a small hint over, like, a situation to use it in. Just a theory.
Oh, yeah.
What'd you think, Joey?
I didn't think this was a game at all.
Aw, why?
It was like a choose-your-own-adventure graphic novel, but with hard to choose your own adventure with. So it's like blindly trying to read the choose-your-own-adventure book.
Aw. But it came out in 1983.
I like the art style. I thought it was pretty cool, but no, it didn't really feel like a game to me.
Did every game but one came out in 1983? Did we pick for the past? No, okay, just the first. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I should point out I've never seen the Jim Henson movie of the same name that this is based off of.
Oh my god, you're right. That's a real thing.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it either, but I do know. Yeah, you just jogged big memory there. Good memory bank pulling there, Colin. It does a cool thing, though. It's almost like, if you look at the game in 2020 eyes, it looks like the game was made in cheap Microsoft Paint from the late 90s.
Yeah.
But when you advance a screen, it does a really cool thing where the sketch outlines will pop up, and then it'll slowly fill in not the rest, but like scattered amount of colors. And it creates a cool little artwork as you go through the adventure. I thought that was a nice little touch. Brings a little bit more individuality to the game.
Yeah. I haven't played... This game kind of reminded me of a text adventure that I played on the Commodore 64 way back when. It was called Asylum. And me and my siblings used to have a lot of fun with it. We never got very far, but we liked to push the limits of what the text software could do.
Oh yeah, yeah. You like fucking with these like pick up bitch.
Yeah. Yeah, at one point the game actually chides you for using insulting language. And then my brother replied with, wah, 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 to which the game says, I do not understand the word wah.
Right, yeah, it always does.
Good times.
Yeah, this game has a pretty in-depth plot to it all, which...
Only because it's based off of an existing plot from a movie.
Right. So, set in Thra, a world with three suns. Every 1,000 years, the three suns come together in an event known as the Great Conjunction. The player controls Jen, a Gelfling, elf-like thing. Two souls are destined to battle to reveal the secrets of their past. One warrior's fate rests in the hands of a tyrannical villain who is hell-bent on destruction. There you go. Couldn't tell you exactly what happened in the game or why, but things occur. Two, like, people come, you destroy a villain, whatever. There's no music in the game. I didn't really expect as much. Not really anything other than kind of a beep. In case you did something right, double beep for another command kind of situation. So, but yeah, if you want to check it out, I mean, you can look at a YouTube video of someone beating it 12 minutes, or you can look up a walkthrough and beat it yourself in 12 minutes. So,
yeah, I got to give this a soft fail.
I'll give a soft pass on the fact it's 1983.
I'm gonna fail it for the fact that it's. I wouldn't even consider it a game.
All right, okay. Colin, you had the next pick.
Yes. It's called Adventure on the Atari 2600.
Way. You mean you picked an adventure game called Adventure for the pre-1985 Adventure podcast episode?
Yes.
Bold move. Yes. Bold move indeed.
It's the only thing that came to mind. It was developed and published by Atari Inc. and released on the Atari 2600 in July 1980. So this may well be the oldest game on the cast, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe it's the oldest one we've ever covered.
The premise is that an evil magician has stolen the enchanted chalice and hidden it somewhere within the kingdom, and you, the player, must find it and bring it back to the golden castle where it belongs, contending with dragons and evil magic along the way. And the dragons all have names, too. The yellow one is called Yorgle, who is just plain mean, according to the manual. The green one is called Grundle, who is mean and ferocious.
A deadly combination. Deadly indeed.
And the red one is called Rindle, who is the most ferocious of all. Now, I chose this one because it featured as a big part of the climax in the movie Ready Player One. Yes, I know it was adapted from a book, but the movie is where I first saw it, and that's how I got the idea for this topic. And yeah, it's apparently one of the first games to ever feature an Easter egg. It's like if you found a specific spot in a wall that had an invisible dot, you could carry it to the end of the game and it would show you the creator's name, Warren Robinett. Because apparently back then, Atari had a practice of not crediting their game developers in their games so the competitors wouldn't be able to recruit them, which ended up causing a bunch of their programmers to leave and form Activision.
Oh, well, there you go.
So we have Atari to blame for them. But yeah, when making Adventure, Warren Robinett decided to embed his name into the game as sort of a silent middle finger to Atari's policies. And it wasn't discovered by them until over a year after release, at which point Warren had already left the company. And for those wondering how to access the Easter egg, you can find it on Wikipedia.
I'm reading it right now. I just pulled it up. And that's actually pretty cool. I wonder who would find this out, just by accident?
Sounds like it.
You would have to, because the place where it's at, it's invisible. The only place you can see the dot is if you're up against the wall. It's crazy.
Yeah. It was that well hidden. But yeah, this one is a lot more comprehensive than the other games, because you can actually do stuff in it without consulting a manual or a guide, although you can find PDFs of the official manual online.
Oh, man. Okay, a 15-year-old from Salt Lake City, I swear it wasn't me, discovered it and sent a letter explaining to Atari Robinett had already quit the company by this point, so Atari tasked designers with finding the responsible code. The employee who found it said that if he were to fix it, he would change the message in the game to say fixed by Brad Stewart. Furthermore, the cost of creating a new read-old memory mask or memory chip was around $10,000, equivalent to $31,000 of this time upon the game's release, making this change a costly endeavor. And it goes on and on. That is fascinating. That's really cool. I didn't know that.
There you go. It's explained in Ready Player One, because that's how our main character manages to get the final key to win the meta game that the virtual games creator put in.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I found this game actually pretty fun. It's more like a puzzle game, if anything.
Yeah, it's pretty much go around, look for the... Look for the enchanted chalice in the various castles. You'll have to find keys to get into the certain castles first, and depending on what difficulty level you're playing, there might be a black bat flying around who will steal your shit, and then that could be really frustrating. And of course, you got to avoid the dragons.
Oh, they were dragons. I kept thinking they were birds. I'm like, these are weird-ass birds.
I liked... I believe it's like the second key you have to get, and you actually have to get this magnet item that I thought it was like a V, or it looks like a V text or something. Mm-hmm. I was trying to my imagination. I'm like, what is this magnet looking thing? And then sure as shit, when I got to another screen, the key started like morphing over to where that was. And I was like, oh, this is cool. Kind of blew my mind in a lot of ways. I was like, wow, this is awesome. I like this. Good job, Adventure.
It had a lot of things, especially the thing that allowed you to walk through walls. Like, yes. That's pretty cool as well.
Yeah, like moving pixels of a bridge over to make a bridge somewhere else.
Yeah. And in one section, you have limited visibility, so you gotta be careful going through the whole maze there, especially with the dragon coming after you, and you can go through walls, which is a real pain in the ass. So you gotta... It would take a lot of practice to really master this game, but I don't have that kind of time.
I could see it being like, imagine yourself in 1980 and you have this thing. I could see devoting so much time to this and having super fun, just leaving the console on for days at a time, trying to figure out like what your next step is, writing down, you know, how much you're willing to kind of put into it and get better. This is one of those games that speaks to me of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I give this an easy pass.
Easy pass. I agree.
Yeah.
I'm glad I added this to my Atari collection. Very, very happy with it.
The only thing I didn't like is some of the blinking zones.
Well, yeah.
That was a little annoying, but I think they went very basic on the UI, but they had a lot of gameplay that they added to it, like the magnet and the bridge. So yeah.
This was before epilepsy was a thing, Joey. I don't know if you were aware of that.
Did this game invent it?
Did it invent epilepsy?
No, don't you know Pokemon did that?
Right? Well, that's when epilepsy became mainstream. Yeah, look at us joking about horrible human conditions. Unfortunate human conditions is what I should say. Phrasing. Very important. All right, Joey.
Yeah, definitely a pass. My turn.
Your turn.
I chose Haunted House for the Atari 2600, developed by Atari.
Survival adventure game.
Published by Atari. Yes, survival horror, single player. I thought it was really interesting, especially each level brought something different when you played it. Like level 2, the walls disappeared, and you can only see it if you're up close to it with the match. So it's another very basic UI. You're just two eyeballs floating around, but... has some interesting sound effects for when you die. And, kind of very basic map that repeats, but it was still kind of entertaining.
It was weird, though. I couldn't really figure out, like, what was going on for this game that came out in 1982. You're welcome, Joey. You forgot to mention that.
Yeah, whatever. I think because you needed the manual or to read about it. It's one of those that had a lot of information that you had to digest before jumping into it.
Yeah, the thing is, I have it, and it like even then it like wasn't really clear because I like is it true that if you look at the ghost or something, the screen starts like quote unquote shake, and it like the whole thing becomes scary and spooky, and like shit will start howling, and the game would react when your eyeballs were in the same sector as like the bat or ghost or something.
I think so, but I don't know if on the first level. I think it gets more intense the more you play it.
Yeah, so like can anyone explain to me what the goal is? Because I for the longest time I thought, okay, so I'm like going down floors into a house where I have to go all the way up to the top floor, get something, and then I can go back down and out, but that's not really what you're trying to do. No.
I think you have to escape the house with the urn. So you have to like build the urn, because I think it's in pieces, find the key, unlock the door, go back, grab the urn, and run out.
Oh. Okay, so there's more than one of those pieces. Okay, that makes sense.
I think so. I don't think the urn was all together, but it might have been. But I could have sworn there was in pieces.
I see. Because I got the key part, and that opened up doors, if you will, which got to other areas. I just wish there was more kind of... I know it's Atari, but the colors weren't... They still weren't giving me the clarity that I was actually, like, advancing or devancing in the game.
Well, if you had to match the floor, they had, like, the thickness of the lines that would... to tell you if it's going up or down.
Oh, well, all right, I'm learning.
And I think there's maps in the book for it.
Maybe I should have looked at the book. I actually have the book for this game. I should have looked at it better. This was like the last game I played for the cast, and I was way into a couple of the other morns. I played Adventure for a long time. I'm not going to lie. I also played Gateway to Upshai a lot as well.
Yeah, when I was first trying to play this game on my emulator, I couldn't really get it to work because you'd get the gameplay screen and I'd move the D-pad, but the eyes would just look in the direction I was pressing. They wouldn't actually move. Mm. But then I found out, play it on an online emulator and then get the same problem. But if you hit like the browser's little version of the reset button on an actual Atari 2600, that's when the game will actually start. But yeah, I liked this game. I mean, I like how you're just a floating pair of eyes in the darkness. I mean, and if you hit the button, you'll light up a match and be able to view items and such. And really hammers home how dark everything is. So without your matches, you don't know what's coming most of the time, although you'll see ghosts in the dark as well as spiders. And I think is it that the less matches you use, the better your score?
I think so.
I couldn't tell you. Move, cat.
Yeah, I remember reading somewhere about like how you use your matches would be important. But yeah, this game really exemplifies the classic nature of Atari 2600 games.
Yeah, trying to get the most out of so little.
Yeah. So exemplifies a lot of what Atari was about at the time.
Mm-hmm. You know what? For Atari, I'll pass this game.
Yeah, I'm going to pass
it. I'll pass it too.
All right. Well, I ended up passing them all. So that was our pre-1985 episode. We covered Gateway to Upshai on the ColecoVision, Advanced Dungeons & Dragons Treasures of Tarman, or AD&D Treasures of Tarman on the Intellivision, Dark Crystal, Atari 8-bit Adventure on the Atari 2600, and Haunted House on the Atari 2600. Joey, favorite, least favorite, and your tier ranking, sir.
Least favorite was going to be the Dark Crystal. Favorite is going to be Adventure. Let's see, Gateway, I'll give it a C. Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, D. Dark Crystal, D. Adventure, I'm going to give it a C. Maybe a B. Now I'm going to stick with a C. And Haunted House, also a C.
Wow. Harsh and low on those scores, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, looking back, they're probably decent for their time, but they don't really live up too much.
They didn't age well, as one might say.
They're decent games, but I wouldn't say they're great or good. They're just, if you can play them, play them. If not, you're not really missing much.
Okay. Colin, same question.
Well, favorite, obviously Adventure. And least favorite, I'm also going to say Dark Crystal. Just didn't seem like as much of an actual game as the others. And for my tiers, Gateway to Upshai, I'll give a B. And Dungeons and Dragons, a D. I'll give it a C.
All right, okay.
Dark Crystal, D. Adventure, A. And Haunted House, B.
Okay. Let's see. I'm really torn between Gateway to Upshai and Adventure. I think I was most impressed with Adventure just from the Atari 2600 aspect. And, I'll say that's my favorite game. But Gateway to Upshai is damn close. My least favorite is, well, I think it's the game I played the least, which would be The Dark Crystal, even though I was confused on what exactly I was supposed to do in Haunted House. I think that's more my fault, though. So the games, I'll give Gateway to Upshai an A. Dungeons and Dragons, I'll give a C. Nothing special there. Dark Crystal, I'll just stick with you guys with a D. Adventure, I'm with Colin. I'm going to say it's an A. And then Haunted cool. House, I'll say a C. Even though we spoke mostly positive about it. And we, besides Dark Crystal, we had nice little rounded podcast here. Nice and short episode with some bullshitting at the beginning.
And we all chose the same games for best and worst.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, so we're starting to agree. Yeah, I'm getting a little hive mind mentality here, but
I'm sure it will change.
Sure, we'll change when we get to the next episode. But the next episode is one that wanted to do for a long time. Kay is going to be involved in this next one. It's cult classic RPGs. So these are basically RPGs that are critically acclaimed but didn't sell well. Is kind of the premise there. That gives you a little bit of a good idea there. It'll be our last retro gaming episode of the year. Then we'll take a look at our tier list, get all our S and A ranked graded games, and we're gonna do a whole topic on ranking our best retro games from 2020. So that should be super fun. And if you want to check out the tier list, I posted to the blog. With every episode, redleafretrocast.blogspot.com, so you can see kind of the progression of where we rank all these games of the year, retro games that we cover anyways. We're going to get a retro game of the year going. I'm very excited to see what we come to a consensus on. The S-ranked tier games are few and far between. Joey, you've been on the podcast for well over a year now.
Yep.
Time flew by there. Colin, you're fucked 2.5 now? 2?
Almost 3, I think. Almost come 3. January.
January will be 3, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So this podcast has been going on quite a long time. I'm very happy. Guys, been a great episode. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye now.
If you own ColecoVision, you already own a powerful state-of-the-art computer that gives you the arcade experience with the newest arcade games like Donkey Kong Jr., Looping, Pepper 2, Time Pilot, Mr. Do, Space Fury, Frontline, arcade controls like Turbo, the Roller Controller, and new Super Action Sports. And soon you'll plug in Atom, the revolutionary ColecoVision family computer module with new super games, keyboard, and printer. ColecoVision, the only system you'll ever need.